Good morning. We are back, Bostopian News with Evan George. Please support and find all of my work at patreon.com/bostopiannews. And we are here to do what could be my last episode. Or, before I scare you, what could have been my last episode? Because what we're going to discuss today is really the conclusion of a 40-month saga here in Boston. And it could end as just a very nice chapter in terms of the history of Boston, really since the George Floyd protests, to see both the beginning and the end to a question of how seriously, materially, did the George Floyd protests materially change policing here in Boston? If we just wanted to answer that question, we can begin with the budget hearings in June of that 2020 summer and end it with this episode. Because what we saw here in this city was calls signed by a majority of the Boston City Council for a 10% decrease to the Boston police budget in 2020. One of which was at-large city councilor Michelle Wu. And now, 3.5 years later, we have that same person, assuming the role of mayor, calling for roughly a 21% increase. And the story of how that happened, from a 10% decrease to roughly a 21% increase over just 40 months, is the story of Boston. And it just is the story of what did the George Floyd protests actually do? What did the media awareness around police brutality actually do? What did liberals marching in the streets or changing their avatars and their profile pictures, adding BLM hashtags, what did that all do? And at least here in Boston, the real answer is absolutely nothing. And now also, finally, I can stop saying asterisks whenever discussing Michelle Wu and the police. Because up until this point, for over 2 years now that she has been mayor, every single time she has vetoed or decreased the police budget or has come to the defense of a police officer or has done everything and everything in terms of going back on campaign promises, to just being a massive disappointment in terms of her relationship with the police, I have always had to say, however, there's an asterisk to this because she is currently negotiating the police union contract and we don't know what that's going to look like. We don't know if we are just seeing a public face and behind the scenes there is something happening. Finally, we have that complete answer, and that complete answer is the vessel was hollow, there was nothing there. Michelle Wu's understanding and her opinion of the police is nothing more than a weather vane that shifts with the wind. And I certainly had hopes that she would have a level of arrogance, that she would hold the police union's feet to the fire, that there was enough attention even from media outlets like the Boston Globe saying that we need actual reforms, we need to put restrictions on overtime, everyone saying, Michelle included, that we have to do this through the union contract negotiations. I had hopes that she genuinely believed that and would be willing to even risk some slight political capital to achieve it, but no, she does not. And in truth, after looking at all of her core policies, issues around climate change, real estate and development, she is willing to do whatever she needs to do to further her political career. That she's not some policy wonk that is going to stand firm and continue to fight strongly for the policies that she knows is right. No, no, no. All that is secondary. All that matters is just shifting with that wind as you slowly ascend the ladders of power. And how we're going to go through this is first looking at the police union contract. Again, this all is going to be debated publicly and voted on by the Boston City Council, probably the next session, but we'll see. So none of this is set in stone, but at least in terms of for this show, we can finally just put to bed why Michelle Wu decided to run for mayor. And it was not to implement the policies that she sincerely believes are in the best interest of the people of the city. It is nothing more than a seat, a throne, a stepping stool to a higher position. And with all that, let's look at what actually is in this contract, starting with the money. And to help me through this, one, I do have the memoranda of agreement that was written up. It's only 6 pages, really. The agreement between the City of Boston and the Boston Police Patrolmen's Association. I'll be using that. I'll be leaning heavily on the great work of the Muslim Justice League and their breakdowns of this. And then also, I'll be reading periodically through Danny McDonald's piece, Boston Police Union Contract Would Exclude Some Offenses from Arbitration, published on December 5th, 2023. Now, just in terms of the money, I'll start by reading from Danny. The contract includes a 21% increase in costs over the 5-year period, retroactive to the summer of 2020 when the union's last contract expired. Cost of living increases in the contract means the current average base salary for a patrol officer would increase to nearly $90,000. That's just the base level by summer of 2025, from the current average of $82,278. And that is before overtime and additional income from police detail work. Now, just to jog your memory, the reason that this is going to go retroactive and starting from the summer of 2020 was that the current Boston Police Union's contract was set to expire and did expire in summer of 2020. Now, there you had Mayor Marty Walsh, absolutely a friend indeed to the Boston Police. And does anyone want to guess why they decided not just to quickly hammer through a deal then? Because, yes, you guessed it was the middle of the George Floyd protests. And that was not good terrain for a Boston Police Union to negotiate a new contract, which absolutely was going to be in their favor, just like this current one is. And they correctly, probably right alongside with Marty Walsh, made the practical choice of saying, let's wait. We're just going to wait this out because the tide will shift, the winds will change. And once they do, then we will negotiate a deal that gets us more money and allows us to do what the people in power knows is the actual role and function of the police. And that pay increase that they negotiated through this new contract is roughly a 10% salary increase. And this includes a lot of other just different type of raises. And before we completely move past this 21% overall increase cost to the city at about $82 million, I just have to remind you that for years, Michelle Wu publicly stated that she supported the idea of reallocating funding away from the police and towards social services. And this really started when she signed that letter that was delivered on Juneteenth to Marty Walsh's desk back in 2020. And that letter wrote, "For too long, Black and brown communities have been excessively policed and disproportionately targeted by state-sanctioned violence. While the trauma of police brutality cannot be overstated, we must look deeper. This is about more than just reform. It is about dissecting and reimagining the system for which not only allowed for, but actively created Boston's massive racial wealth gap, the 30-year life expectancy gap based on zip code, and most recently, the racial disparity in COVID-19 infections and outcomes." And when it lists a number of asks, the first ask is 10% reduction in the Boston Police Department budget and overtime budget. And then it goes on to make a lot of other budget requests and a lot of reforms to reimagining public safety. Also, of course, includes abolish the gang database. And we all know how Michelle Wu turned on that. But that was not just the only time she has stated this. Even now, if you go to michelleforboston.com and look under her section for public safety, under addressing underlying causes of crime and criminalization, she has listed Too many of our neighbors, especially in communities of color, are living with untreated trauma. We need to prevent violence by making equitable investments in our neighborhoods and interrupt the cycles of violence by providing survivors with supportive services. At the same time, we must dismantle other systems of violence inflicting trauma upon Black residents and communities of color, including housing instability, food insecurity, transit injustice, mass incarceration, and climate crisis. By thinking holistically about public safety through a public health lens and redirecting funding into education, housing, healthcare, and other basic needs, we can alleviate the trauma caused by over-policing while investing in a safer and more equitable future. It's still there. It's still on the website calling for reallocation. And what we have instead is a 21% increase. And what puts this even in more stark contrast is even as recently as the proposed budget for the fiscal year 2023, so meaning back in 2022, Michelle Wu proposed, like this is back in early April, when the mayor, you know, first proposes a budget to the Boston City Council, she proposed a 1% cut to the Boston Police Department. Now, a lot of that was really just because some leadership positions were entering retirement, and since the leaders of the Boston Police make an insane amount of money, just by having a couple retirements, we ended up getting a 1% cut. So it really wasn't anything that drastic. It was more just a fluke of the personnel. But still, that proposed budget back in April of 2022 still included a slight marginal decrease. And yet here we have about a year and a half later, or more than that, from that April of 2022 until now with this contract union negotiation of, we'll call it December 2023, this is going to ultimately result in a 21% increase. That is how quick things changed. And with giving up this massive material increase to the police, let's look at the changes that Michelle Wu described as groundbreaking and historic. Because, wow, you really need to stretch the definition of those terms to think that this is anything like groundbreaking or historic. And let's start with the big issue, the one that the media, everyone, including Michelle Wu, has been discussing about what we need to do to rein in police spending, particularly overtime. Because for years now, Michelle Wu and others and myself have been pointing out that the police can spend as much as they want on overtime. It is unlimited check that they can draw from that well again and again and again. And this is not even including the massive corruption that we have with the police overtime spending. And don't forget that of April of this year, a handful of police officers that were originally singled out as scapegoats of the Boston Police Department in terms of the overtime pay scan were acquitted in just mere hours. And the reason wasn't that they didn't commit any crimes. In fact, I'll read from you the Globe synopsis by Sean Carter from April 27, 2023. He writes, "Lawyers for the four had told jurors that there was no dispute they were paid for overtime hours they didn't work, but said they were merely following long-standing practices accepted by top brass." And what that means is that it is wrong to single out these four officers for a massive department-wide, top-to-bottom fraud, theft of the general public, because they're all doing it, and they're just following the basic corrupt practices. But even moving all of that threat and crime to the side, for years, the last two budget cycles, anytime the Boston City Council tried to reduce the overall number that we set aside for police overtime, Michelle Wu would veto it and would always do so in the most condescending way. I'm going to read to you a letter that she sent to the Boston City Council of this year, June 16th, 2023. She writes, "In the police department, the council's proposed reductions to the budget are illusory, as the city is obligated to cover salary and overtime expenses incurred by the department," saying that all of these political games you're doing with the overtime budget, they're illusory. And what we're really going to do is get these big changes through the police union contract. I'm going to keep setting this up. Here is an interview that she was on This is from May 12th of this year with GBH News addressing how she's going to solve the overtime problem with the police union contracts.
I feel like every time I come, it's a little bit of a report on contract negotiations as well. And as mentioned previously, overtime and how we are treating overtime and the buckets available and how those are managed, that is very much defined by the provisions in the contract in a lot of ways. And so that is a central part of our negotiations.
And after all of that buildup, do you know how this contract addresses police overtime? It doesn't. It's not even in the new police union contract. They just completely sidestep it. Now, there are two incredibly small incremental things. One of them is that, and we're going to discuss details in a second, they're no longer allowing police officers to basically cover multiple details simultaneously. Again, this is one of the many ways that they commit fraud. That, and they are going to have a different policy around police officers on medical leave in terms of how are we going to make sure that they truly are unfit, because of just, again, how much they rip off that system. And those two little changes, the Wu administration is saying, will cut down on overtime pay because now we'll have more police officers. I'm just going to read you directly the Muslim Justice League analysis of this. The city claims these changes, streamlining detail assignments, medical leave, etc., could cut down overtime, but haven't shown the numbers for that. No explicit change to overtime. So this massive thing, again, the Boston Globe editorial board has been writing about this nonstop. And again, this is not a lefty body, the Boston Globe editorial board. In them supporting Michelle Wu vetoing the overtime budget, they wrote a piece, "Want to cut the police budget? This isn't how." First sentence, "Boston does spend too much time on police overtime, but the way to tackle that overspending is through renegotiating union contracts." And they have multiple pieces for years covering this. March 16th, 2021, Boston police overtime still out of control. May 5th, 2023, ending the culture of police overtime abuse. This is an issue that everyone, including Michelle, has been talking about for years, and this contract doesn't even attack it. It doesn't even go after the premise. It allows them to have this slush fund that they can just indulge in whenever they want. And for all of this buildup around it, for it to not even address it directly, is insane. And now look at the two other things that they are labeling as wins. The next being police details. Because for years, the Boston Police Union has had as part of their contract a monopoly over details. Basically, the people who wear the vests who wave around traffic when they are doing routine repairs. The thing that I believe no other city in the country, unless they're also their police union dictates it, has this limitation. Many have what are called flaggers. It is a very easy training program to stop a car, wave through another car, stop the next car, wave through that car, etc. This is not complicated. And the big change that the Wu administration is calling a win is that, well, now the Boston Police Union will allow some other people to have this responsibility some of the time, but guess what? Those other people are also going to be police officers. And they separate it into two different types of details. And for some of them, you can have Boston Police Department retirees, Boston Housing Authority police officers, Boston-based College University police officers. So it is still keeping this unnecessary restriction where I think it was last year, the year before, 40% of all calls for details from construction crews went unfulfilled because police officers are already making more than enough money. They're already double dipping multiple times over that they don't need it. 40% going unfulfilled. And now the Boston Police Union saying, okay, we'll let go of this stranglehold a little bit, but we're going to do it just to help other police officers. This isn't about worker safety. This isn't about saving money. This is about us helping our people materially. And then for a different type of detail, they open it up a little bit, saying that, yep, you can have a different private entity be hired for some of these other things if they meet the following conditions. One of which, the entity is a Massachusetts business organization with law enforcement experience. So it is still keeping it within this family of police and police officers passing money around, scratching one another's back. And what makes this even funnier is an NPC host called me out on this when I did my video on it. Sue O'Connell, I don't know if she's a host or if she just works for NBC, Channel 10. Someone shared my video when they were having some back and forth, and this NBC reporter writes, "Does Evan know that the state law dictates police detail usage, not city law?" Question mark. And what makes that so astounding is that law that she's referencing changed 15 years ago. In 2008, Massachusetts became the last state to break this statewide stranglehold that police unions like to have over details because it's a massive moneymaker for them, and instituted our own kind of like statewide conditions for a city flaggers. However, that law also put so many restrictions that it was pretty ineffective. And in 2011, the New England Center for Investigative Reporting did a massive analysis of why did this law that we just passed in 2008 to actually open up city flaggers, why didn't it have this big impact? Why aren't we seeing more of these positions being created? Why is it still the police that are doing it? And they came for four conclusions. One was that 2008 law, if the road cars are going faster than 45 miles per hour, then you still need to use police details. However, just speaking for Boston, I mean, the vast, vast, vast majority of roads in Boston, you cannot exceed 45 miles per hour. In fact, I'd be shocked if there was even one or two of them that you could. I'm trying to think of where they would be. The second is that for any reason, if the police say that, no, this detail might have public safety reasons, then you have to use the police, not flaggers. The third is that municipalities can decide to use police details over flaggers if they choose to. And finally, because of the collective bargaining agreement, the union contracts can stipulate this. So that statewide law in 2008 that this NBC reporter still thought we were operating under does have all these restrictions. We could have fixed this through this police union contract. And yet another thing Michelle Wu didn't do. And there are so many barriers around ever having a civilian flagger in the city that is basically mute. And those civilians are all going to be former cops who have the same mentality of the Marines. Once a Marine, always a Marine. And it's going to be nothing more than, again, another back-scratching operation for them. And just having more and more police throughout our society, in our communities. And that gets us to the final big change, the big, massive win that every single news article that discussed this, referenced this as well, and went back and discussed Patrick Rose, is about getting rid of arbitration for some heinous crimes. So essentially, what tends to happen is that if a police officer is caught doing something heinous, like let's say raping a child, and they do an internal affairs investigation, and even the fellow police officers are like, yeah, he probably did it. And then even then, if they suggest firing, or if this police officer is ever indicted for a crime, like this has happened multiple times with like drunk driving charges, that even then the police officer can basically go to arbitration with the police union contract as this legal shield and can generally get their job back no matter what they do. And that is, again, overcoming these massive barriers in the first place. So some police officers have been able to get their jobs back after being fired because they were able to go through arbitration. And what this new union contract does, and this is a good thing, slightly, I'm going to explain why I say slightly, is there are roughly 30 different charges that if the police officer is found through internal affairs and is indicted, they can no longer use arbitration. And a lot of these have to do with rape. A lot of these have to do with attempted murder, theft, and really any level of violence towards children. However, a big thing that's not there is the use of excessive force. And so you need to be doing something like indecent assault and battery on child under the age of 14. So according to the Wu administration, if that child is 15, no, you can use this legal shield to get your job back. Other such things listed. One is mayhem. Another, wanted or reckless behavior creating a risk of serious bodily injury or sexual abuse to a child. Rape of a child during commission of certain offenses. Rape of a child through use of force. Rape and abuse of child. A lot of them are, again, along this theme. Kidnapping. Drug trafficking. Also, I think kidnapping, it only addresses if they are under 16. So, according to this, you can still be indicted for kidnapping an adult and be okay. And you can still use arbitration. That's a little odd. Another one. Incitement of child under age 18 to engage in prostitution, human trafficking, and commercial sex activity. But I guess if that person is an adult, then you can engage them in prostitution and human trafficking if you would like, and then still be covered by this union contract. Because it ends with the line, both the employer and the union retain all legal and contractual rights with respect to offenses not to set forth above. And this is just going to be the goalpost. Is something's going to happen. Some police officer 5 years from now is going to do something that's not explicitly on this list. Like, for example, human trafficking of a 19-year-old. And then whoever is mayor then, probably Michelle Wu still in 4 years. You never know what's going to happen with the U.S. Senate. Then the next big contract fight is going to be about like adding that clause. Oh, we raised the age that you can't use arbitration of human trafficking from under 18. Now it's under 20. And that is just going to be the barrier and nothing else. There will just be some incident where a police officer goes too overboard, gets caught. And now this is the second thing, is it still heavily relies on the judicial system actually bringing to justice police officers, which we all know it can't do. And back to that Danny McDonald article, Danny references a conversation he had with Howard Freeman, who is a civil rights attorney, and quote, said police officers are rarely charged with crimes and internal affairs investigators don't often sustain complaints, particularly those alleging excessive force. Quote, my sense is that it's not going to change much. So when asked, what does this do? A civil rights attorney says, quote, my sense is it's not going to change much. And he's right. And all those things I just listed with the material increases to pay, of just now allowing retirees and just different police officers to do details, the never really truly addressing overtime, the changed arbitration around some heinous crimes, those are really the highlights. And again, it's like a little bit of a slightly different policy around analyzing how a police officer is unfit to serve so that they're not just all on medical leave. But it doesn't do anything, and the cops get all the money. That's the thing, the material change. Not just all of the money, they still really control the reform process, or I mean, the accountability process for when they do things like raping children. That's still in their control. And what this doesn't address, and what not many articles or any at all brought up in the media when they kept highlighting that case about Patrick Rose, is that not only was it just widely known in the internal affairs sustained that, yeah, he was likely raping these children, and then they hid behind, well, we couldn't fire him, we couldn't do it. The Boston police members, the officers, years later, when this was widespread knowledge throughout the department, elected him to head the union. Let me say that again. This does not address about Patrick Rose, not just how legally he was able to maintain his position and what were the clauses in the contract union negotiations that kept him in office and other police officers like him in office, but his fellow police officers who knew that he raped children voted for him to head their union. How does this address that in any way? And what confidence do you have that now internal affairs is going to bring to justice these bad cops when we just had an example a few weeks ago of our new Boston police commissioner overturning what an internal affairs found to be excessive force, going back to them and saying, look at this again, and them changing their outcome? How are we now going to pretend that this is a trusted institution? We can't. But people in power, including Michelle Wu, including all of the members of her administration, are going to pretend because they never really cared. And to the point that they did, they have come to the realization that they are on the in-group, that the police are not a threat to them because they are at a level of wealth and power and ownership of property that they are the ones the police protect. They climbed that ladder. They're in that circle. They're within the walls. They don't have to worry about it. Maybe they did a little when they were felt that they could be on the outside, but now they've demonstrated that they're one of the good ones, and the police are there to protect them, and at some level, they understand that. So it's not just about not caring. It is about, in this age where things are going to continue to deteriorate, where we see rises of fascism and state levels and uses of violence, I want to be on the in-group. You want a 21% increase? Okay. Just make sure you're there to keep the them away from us. And I'm going to close this out with just looking at different comments and speeches Michelle Wu made 3.5, 4 years ago until today, so that you can see how it is possible for her to articulate one thing and then, as ascending into power, articulate something completely different. And we can begin with how she started to market herself in the lead up to her announcement of running for mayor, how she was discussing things around the George Floyd protests. And to start, let's hear her words going all the way back June 24th, 2020, during the first real big budget fight in God knows how long in Boston's history, all centered around, does this new budget that Marty Walsh put forward meet the moment of the police? Here is Michelle Wu's comments during that.
Councilor Braden, the chair recognizes Councilor Wu. Councilor Wu, you have the floor.
Thank you, Madam President. The bread and butter that feeds structural racism are evasions and procrastinations. To pretend otherwise ignores the history of our country and our city, and withholds the promise of Boston's prosperity and opportunity across all of our neighborhoods. This council has taken legislative steps and has voted time and again on non-binding resolutions that express our support for equity and justice. Yet passing this budget is a message to those calling for equity, justice, relief in our streets, those who have reached out to us by the tens of thousands, and especially those who aren't connected enough to reach out to their city councilors. It's a message that they should be satisfied with incremental change, and yes, crumbs. I refuse to be complicit in the inertia of delaying structural change as too expensive, too scary, not quite the right timing.
And she continues with that, but that is ultimately the person that she sold herself as during the George Floyd protests as she was ramping up her announcement to run for mayor, was someone who was not satisfied with incremental change, with somebody who addressed it at a systemic level, meaning it doesn't just matter that you swapped out the Boston Police Commissioner, that this person back in 2020, who again, I have always said is incredibly intelligent, understands that this is about systems and structures, not about personnel. And that is how she marketed and sold herself. And she, and many other politicians before 2020, did not have that analysis, would not have made those statements. And we kind of, myself included, gave everyone a pass and saying, okay, like politicians have been horrible around the role of the police for years and decades. Maybe in what was the largest civil rights protest since the 1960s, maybe we could have a change. And to go back how I started this, that, you know, we have our answer as to, like, what did we get from the George Floyd protests? That hearing in 2020 started with an 8-minute and 46-seconds moment of silence. And that is what we got. We got symbolic measures. We got kneeling with henty cloth. We got nice speeches from some politicians, Michelle Wu included. But materially, what did the police get? A 21% increase in their funding. Never, ever, ever forget that. And to focus more on how Michelle Wu was discussing, you know, her past beliefs about the police and how she's changed and she's learned, I want to play for you what she once said to me in an interview. Because people who have been following me for a while probably know that I think starting in 2019, I started a web radio show, might be the best way to describe it, called Rent is Radio. And actually, to say I started it is wrong. I was the co-host. The host was Lauren Pespisa, my good friend, and our producer Herb. And we had a great show. Obviously, COVID kind of wrecked it a little bit. That happens. Things evolve. And we covered the budget, and Michelle Wu reached out to us. And this was really part of her beginnings of announcing her mayoral campaign. She didn't announce it on the show. We did briefly discuss it afterwards because it was an open secret that she was going to run. And she reached out to us if we could interview her. And as we did, we discussed her past views on the police and how she's grown on that issue. So listen to hear how she addresses that.
I want to get there because not that I don't want to say, I'm not trying to be negative. I have a slight bone to pick about last year because I was assaulted at straight pride by police officers as well as many of my friends, tear gas, pepper sprayed. And I felt that along with a lot of people that I was there with, that you were quite silent on the issue. And I want to know, have you those tapes and have you, you know, maybe I haven't, maybe you've spoke out on it since, but I do recall a lot of us being like, wow, Michelle Wu's like kind of back in the cops here after like, we're like, you know, getting our legs, you know, hurt and getting arrested and everything. Have you reviewed those videos and have you sort of come to a different conclusion about police violence against protesters? Because I am an avid protester, often a subject of police violence.
Yeah, I've had many, many conversations since then and mm-hmm. sat down with activists who were there and people who received emails from family members of those who came home with concussions, knocked down, you know, unprovoked. And so I think for me, it was just a really big lesson of like, I wasn't there.
Right.
And one, I should have been there, right? I probably should have been there.
It wasn't that nice.
I, that day, I actually was very sick and was like in bed, yep. And so missed out on following it in real time, I think. And then so going back and trying to figure out what happened and not having the right sort of scale of conversations, I go back to a place where I feel leaders need to first and foremost experience or at least stand with people who are experiencing it on the ground. And that was just a very big lesson for me that like,
okay,
I totally misread that situation.
Yeah.
So funny to hear Michelle Wu articulate, oh, like, you know, I should have been there with you. and then her discussing, you know, she misread that situation, this referring to straight pride. And that interview was July 13th of 2020. And now let's jump forward. And we discuss this briefly when I was discussing, I think, changes to the BRIC system and her flip-flopping on that issue as well. But listen to how now she talks about this, because according to this, what she just said there in July of 2020, that when she first came to the defense of the police for their actions during Straight Pride, she didn't really, you know, see the videos enough. But, you know, now she has. She's seen the videos. She's talked to the people on the ground. She understands what went down. Well, let's hear how she now recently addressed what happened. And this is, again, all pertaining to that Captain Daniel Lecky. And, you know, what is it really like being a police officer? And here we are now 3 years, 3.5 years later.
And with Captain Daniel Lecky, you know, there are multiple career pathways, even within, in terms of being a police officer. Some officers tend to be in more administrative roles or have very little interaction with the public if they're doing, you know, investigatory work of a certain type or they're brought in certain situations. And then others have a career trajectory where they are more frequently in front of the members of the public in very high pressure, volatile situations. And so I know he's been on the front lines of many situations like that. And each one of those has been adjudicated in the past, some before Commissioner Cox got here, some now after, and I stand by the commissioner and the department in their leadership and know that we are headed in the right direction. For
jumping forward a bit,
he wanted to make sure that they were done fully.
And you're comfortable that Captain Danilek is on the streets?
Yes.
She went from, I should have been there at Straight Pride, standing with you,
that I saw the abuses of the police a little too late. I'm sorry. I should have listened. I read the emails to 3.5 years later saying, hey, listen, you know, police is a tough job. He's in a lot of high stakes situations, and I feel safer that he's out there. And that change can be one of two things. It can be something internal, getting to what I was addressing before, that Michelle Wu has come to realize that she is on the in-group, that she has attained a level of wealth, power, and status, that the police are now there for her rather than against her. That's possible, but I don't think that's the answer. I think the answer is she's a politician. She said what she said in 2020. She ran on the issues that she stated in her policy programs in 2021. Because that is what the climate called for. And now that the winds have shifted, liberals are done pretending, she can just shift with them and do what they want. Because she doesn't have any strong held beliefs around the role of the police. And if she does, then she's willing to suppress them to what maintains her political leverage, her political power, what increases her chance of a re-election or a future seat. She, like all of us, can see the direction this country is going. And rather than using her position and power to try to stand against that force, she is just simply rising that tide. And the politicians that make it are the ones who do that. It is still a rational, intelligent choice what she's making. It is just also one that is fundamentally immoral and harmful towards people. But if you put that secondary, or if you can continue to delude yourself in saying, yes, I know this is a bad policy, yes, I know that people are going to be harmed by this, however, it is still better that I'm the one doing it because I have feelings and I care, and maybe I can blunt the edges, maybe I can have little small snippets of incremental change that you wouldn't have gotten from the others. Maybe I will not be throwing as much red meat to the bases to rile them up than others will, so I can still justify my decisions internally to myself. Which is, at the end of the day, really what liberals need to do is be able to look at themselves in the mirror and justify it. And that is something that conservatives have mostly freed themselves of. They don't need to do that. They can rejoice in it. Celebrate the violence. Why are you pretending to feel bad? We're both doing the same things. You might as well just enjoy it. And the last thing I want to play is a little bit about the role of the media in this, because of their own, again, they have their own biases in terms of the corporations and the people that they ultimately answer to, in terms of, you know, not pushing too hard. And we know where the Herald stands and where the Globe stands. But this is the pushback that some of the journalists are having in this conversation around this police union contract. And this is from a very recent interview on GBH with Fatima, the executive director of the Muslim Justice League. Just listen to the question that they give her when discussing the police union contract.
Do you think that will still happen under a black commissioner, police commissioner, whose boss is an Asian woman? Who is the they that have been targeting black folks? As I understand, there's a lot of black and Latino officers who are part of BRIC.
Now, I'm going to let you hear Fatima's response because she does a great job answering it. But can you just think of, like, and they're discussing the BRIC system, so not specifically the changes in the police union contract, but overall that sentiment and how that exists. And there are ways of asking that question that I don't think would have come across as dumb as that guy did. I'm sorry if that phrasing is harsh. I mean, you could have phrased it like, there are some who would say that because we have all of this diversification in our leadership, that these problems are of the past, how would you address that? Rather than him saying, we got an Asian woman now. Like, what are we talking about? One, because it also falls on this very weird amnesia that, I mean, we've had black Boston police commissioners before. In fact, very recently, our Boston police commissioner was also a black man. We had an acting mayor in Kim Janey, who was also a woman of color. That, like, one, these aren't the first times that these things have happened. But let me play you her response, and then I'll address that a little bit more.
Absolutely. I think that's a great question because I know a lot of counselors were bringing up how the idea of diversifying BRIC might help, but it won't. The race of law enforcement doesn't actually impact, you know, the systemic violence that happens from law enforcement. It doesn't matter if it's a black or brown person who's participating in this surveillance mechanism. So having a black commissioner, which we've had before, having Mayor Wu in office doesn't change what this institution has been doing, right?
And she continues, and I highly recommend everyone go check that out. I know Muslim Justice League put it out on December 9th, so the interview may have taken place the previous day or two. But ultimately, that is what a lot of liberals, Michelle Wu, and the media are going to hide behind, was that we have these new people. We have a Boston police commissioner with a sympathetic story, as long as you don't look too closely into it, and I've already discussed that ad nauseum, that now that we have these people of color in these institutions, then you don't have to worry about it. Because it was never the problem of the institution. It was never all that systemic systems, the things that Michelle Wu was talking about back in 2020. No, no, no. This is just about who's sitting in the chair. And now that we don't have all these white men in the chair, things will just get better. It's not the institutions. Don't worry about it. We can increase funding. It'll be fine. And I want to end this, and this whole saga, this whole campaign for the last 40 months, that we can just finally move past it in terms of Michelle Wu, why she sought power, and what she plans to do with it, just to really wrap up this issue around diversification in the police. Just want to read you a quote from James Baldwin. It begins, "Black policemen were another matter. We used to say, if you just must call a policeman, for we hardly ever did, for God's sake, try to make sure it's a white one. A black policeman could completely demolish you. He knew far more about you than a white policeman could, and you were without defenses before this black brother in uniform, whose entire reason for breathing seemed to be his hope to offer proof that, though he was black, he was not black like you." And there have been countless, countless studies recently that diversifying the police force does not change what the police force does. But our media and other liberal institutions are going to still use that to hide behind and to justify, because they do not want to be seen as celebrating the violence of the state against oppressed people in the same way that their contemporaries across the political aisle do. And with this, I still really am looking forward to seeing how the Boston City Council addresses it, whether or not they do it in this session. I think is rare, but who knows? Maybe they'll just do this as a solid so that some of the new councilors don't have to get their hands a little dirty. But I really hope this gets punted to the next session and we have this debate and we can really see what the new Boston City councilors are going to do on this issue, particularly Henry Santana, Enrique Pepin. I'll throw Ben Weber for fun, though. Again, I can kind of guess how a lot of these people are already going to vote. And I really look forward to seeing the media, because they're all going to just hide behind that one little change to the arbitration, which, again, as a civil rights attorney says, is not going to change much. But, you know, we can just edit that out next time and talk about how this is a historic win. No more Patrick Roses. And this will ultimately pass. I can just tell you that. As long as it's not some big incident where the wind shifts and people have to pretend a little while longer, this is going to pass. But regardless, I will be here alongside you. And with that, if you would like to ensure that I stay here alongside you to cover these issues, please do like, subscribe, share, spread this around. And of course, if you would like to show your support, heading over to patreon.com/bostopianews. I think some of the rates are begin at $4 a month, a cup of coffee rate, just to show your appreciation. And the more people that do, the more episodes I'm going to make. And I'm going to set a goal. And if we hit that goal, I'll start doing maybe 5 or 6 episodes a month and maybe working my way up to 2 episodes a week and still doing all the videos. And if you want to continue to have a voice and maybe widening the space of independent media, I think it's important to support. But of course, I am biased because you are basically just giving me money. And if you cannot afford to, I absolutely understand. And that is why I make 99.9% of my content all free, especially anything knowledge-based. I don't think I have a single thing currently paid-walled, but I will always keep that in my back pocket just in case. And with that, take care. And as always, I hope you have a great rest of your day.